Hello, long time no speak, and welcome to the Right Right Podcast, Season 3, episode, I want to say this is episode 13? I don't know, we've been gone for a few months. Attentive listeners will have noticed that we've vanished.
You're right.
We're back. Uh-huh. And we mean it this time. Or at least I do. These guys have been ready to go for a while, and I kind of fell off the face of the earth. So, in that spirit, today's episode is going to be about returning after a long absence. But for new listeners, perhaps, I'll introduce myself. My name is Elon.
I'm John.
And I'm Craig.
And we are the hosts, the permanent hosting team. We have guest hosts every now and again of the Right Right Podcast. And so I'm gonna start this episode out with an admission. You know, I gotta come clean. The reason that we haven't podcasted in what was it 4 months is because my life completely got away from me. I just work continued to climb in terms of its demand on me. I was unable to meet a lot of the deadlines I was setting myself at work and in my personal life. Things just began to I just lost control over my own workload in the various areas of my life. And it's a pity that it's so much easier to just vanish than it is to hold yourself accountable for those kinds of absences. And so first and foremost, I'm sorry it happened. You know, I wish it hadn't. And I'm grateful that in the various circles in my life, I have friends who are like, yeah, whatever, man, we had stuff to do and now we're back together. No problem. So thank you, John and Craig, for your patience with me. And what I want this episode to be about is about understanding what it is we can do when we fall off the proverbial horse and getting back on. So first, I'd like to ask you guys if you have any direct experience with this kind of falling off the horse scenario, either in your professional life as editors and publishers, or as writers, or in your careers before you made these jumps, or in your careers now. And was it always for the same reason, or does stuff happen, and this kind of takes place in people's lives? So whoever wants to go first, feel free.
Oh, you're pointing at me.
Yeah, okay. I don't know what to say.
I guess I'm going first. Well, the thing that comes to mind right away, like before I started Story Perfect and I started working as an editor, I used to be heavily involved in university. I was a tutor. I was a study skills instructor. I was also a math student. So I was extremely busy. And the biggest thing I know, it's one of those things I didn't notice how off the horse I was. I mean, I did manage, that's about when I wrote 1,000 Roads, it was in my last year there, and I would squeeze in little tiny bits here and there, but, you know, then when I was done, I fell off the horse in a, you know, that sense you're describing, where it's just like, you can't, it's so hard to find your foundation in that, and so when I moved on from that and decided, you know what, I'm gonna try to create some kind of work environment for myself that's congruent with the writing, that helped a lot. Managing time where you have no structure is extremely difficult. So I was able to transfer some of the skills. I mean, one of the things I would do is I would sit down with students and I would help them plan their study time. So a lot of times it would be they're struggling with studying, and what I would do is I would sit down with a weekly planner and have them block in everything they do in the week, and then start to see where the black holes are, and then you start to realize, okay, you concretize what your week looks like, and so it wasn't until I started doing that with my business time that I realized that basically it's the same as being a student. But you kind of have to have that free time, because the one thing that I noticed a lot, like when I would help students out, when they work long shifts and they have lots of commitments, once you start dumping your week down, you start to realize how overcommitted you are. And the only way you can reclaim that space is to start saying no to lots of things. There's a lot of things that we don't say. It's like we don't say no to, but we don't say yes to, but by not saying no, we say yes implicitly. And that is the deadly thing. And like, I'm still working on that one. There's like every couple months I'm like, I see another no I need to be saying. So kind of like peeling back these layers and it gets a little clearer. But it's been a process and it's tough. It's really, really tough. Like, having come from that place, I can appreciate that for everyone trying to figure out their ideal schedule, especially writers where we're creating our own time pockets. Like, it's hard. That's part of, I want to say that's half the job itself.
Yeah, managing yourself is incredibly difficult. And it's I think there's something about it also that it feels like it shouldn't be difficult, and it also forces you to take a look at yourself that is pretty uncomfortable. You're like, why can't I figure out really basic stuff? Like, shouldn't I be able to, you know, do things consistently? I mean, I've held jobs. Like, why can't I, when I don't have this external force, why is it so difficult to do the basics? And so you have to sort of manufacture that external force by saying, okay, there is this this schedule that I'm adhering to, and that is my basic understanding of my day and my time. And it's very easy to think of it as a harsh self-critique. Like, I have to be controlled because I'm not responsible enough on my own. But I don't think that's actually what's going on. It's like, my natural inclination is to just chill. And when I do that, things just start falling apart. It's interesting, though, that you said that about looking at scheduling with students that you were tutoring about, you know, scheduling out study time, because I've done that in the past where I've said, okay, if I look at my open days as blocks of 30 minutes, and this was, I think, something that you had talked about maybe a couple of years ago that I tried to adopt. Like, what, like, if I just set myself time to read, like, I know I want to read, and if I just pick up a book and read, I will read for, like, 6 hours, and then other stuff will inevitably not get done. But if I say to myself, I've got, you know, an hour and a half to read, and I'll set an alarm and say, okay, when this alarm goes off, I'll finish the chapter that I'm reading and then be on to the next thing, I'm much more likely to get, you know, a handful of things done that day. But without the foresight of saying, I have other things that I want to do, I will just read all day long. Or the alternative is that, like, I'll be like, oh, you know what? I want to hop into Overwatch. I want to play some video games. So I'll play for like an hour. And then like 6 hours later, I'm like, oh no, it happened again. So having an idea of what the day is going to look like, even if it's just sort of skeletally, can be extremely helpful. I want to ask kind of a specific question of you, Craig, and maybe this hasn't happened to you, maybe it has, but you manage several different aspects of your life, right? Like, you have a job that you like, you know, you work in this facility that helps people every day, and that's a really important thing to be doing, and I think that there's a lot of that that probably does some good soul nourishing, and that's something that's really, you know, respectable. You also have various pen names. You have several podcasts you're doing on your own. You have a publisher that you're helping to run, that you're running. So you have a lot of different balls in the air at any given time. Are there times when one has fallen and you haven't noticed until way later? And what is picking that up look like? Or are you just superb? And does that not happen to you?
Well, I don't want to say that I'm superb, but I think it's been more of a natural growth rather than doing everything all at once and then trying to figure it out. So it started with one pen name, and that's where I tended to get a bit off the rails, because when you've got one pen name and you're just working on sort of one thing at a time, nice and slow, it's very easy to get distracted, get off the horse, off the rails, whichever analogy you want to use. But then as soon as I started adding other pen names to my writing process, whenever I get off the rails in one pen name, then I turn my attention to the other one, and I've got that fresh energy there. So I now have even more pen names, but balancing between the multiple pen names has helped me to always stay on task. It does allow one pen name to go off the rails every now and then. There are certain pen names that I've not written in for quite a while just because I'm doing a really big project under one pen name. So over the years, that sort of balanced out. And then as I started to get some more consistent income from my self-published writing, then it sort of turned into a job. And I know that if I don't release stuff regularly, I don't get this money, which helps me make ends meet, you know, which is kind of important. Then from there, there was the starting up a publishing company. And while we get behind sometimes, we never really get off the rails. And in my head, that's because I'm accountable to all of the authors and all of the editors and all of the readers. So I know that there are all these people that are depending on me. So I make sure that we never get completely off the rails. That might mean cutting a few corners sometimes here and there, like not in any way that would affect quality, but, you know, maybe cutting a few corners in marketing. Just because time runs out, as it does. And so then once that system kind of got underway and it became a regular part of my schedule, then adding in some of the other podcasts became another way to diversify what I do. But by adding things in gradually, then I get used to things before adding a new thing. And then, I don't mean this in the wrong way, but having John manage me when I need managing, that helps. Because sometimes he can look at me and say, when's the last time you did this? Or, you know, are you on top of these projects? And he does it in the most positive way. He's not like a dictator in the home.
Well, and a lot of times it's not so much the publisher side. It's also writing. Mm-hmm. I'm aware that there are lots of balls in the air, and I want to make sure that Craig connects to his writing a bit this week, despite all the balls in the air. And so it'll be like, how about make a goal of 25 minutes on pen name X, pen name Y, like, and maybe do an edit, get a bit of progress in, say, editing or publishing, and then do the next pen name. So it's like, I try to look at it. Sometimes, you know, you have an objective observer, someone who sees what you're doing, and then they can kind of see things you can't see yourself.
For example, I'm working on a giant novel under my Cameron D. James pen name that I'm so close to being done. It's going to be like 180,000 words. Like, it's way too long. But I've not done any writing on it in about 2 weeks because I've been focusing on all the stuff I have to do for the publisher. And John is aware of that. And every once in a while, he'll say, why don't you do some writing?
Yeah, and it's not
a gentle prod.
It's like a simple, okay, so where are you at? You're on this chapter. Okay, make a goal of finishing a chapter. So it's a very concrete goal that's you can write down on a list.
And that goals seem really essential.
And I totally realize that not everybody has that sort of home situation because we're two writers that live together. So that makes things easier.
Yeah, Crystal, my girlfriend and partner, she often will be like, hey, you know, you've been doing, you know, thing X for a while. Any chance you might want to, like, stop that and go to thing Y? And it's always the right suggestion, and I'm not always the most receptive to it. And that's the thing that I need to be really attentive to, is my own receptivity to being told that I've been not slacking, but just not focused. It's absolutely fascinating, though, to be confronted with this idea that structurelessness is the enemy of like confident productivity. And like productivity is such a, I don't like using it as this kind of goal. It seems so soulless and so artificial, but like all the writers that I spoke to So I just started a graduate program, listeners. A lot has changed in the last few months, and in particular over the last few weeks. But I'm now at an MFA program, a low residency MFA program based in Colorado. If you want to ask me questions about it, feel free. I'm actually going to be talking about it a lot on another podcast that I do that I've only released one episode of, but I gave it a name, The Warbler Weekly, which is deeply, deeply ironic. that is funny as an aside, but another of the many balls that dropped. But everyone that I spoke to there, they the way that they were able to express and explain that learning craft and studying the actual work as opposed to waiting for this sort of like, you know, ephemeral muse to strike, and this idea that you have to be, you know, in the throes of passion to write something truly great. They're like, no, you know, that's just not really what it's about. It's about understanding the way stories are told, the way people perceive story, and the structures of story don't cheapen the value of story. They exist because that's how people communicate. Like, it has nothing to do, like, if one of the metaphors that one of my teachers, or I guess, yeah, it was a metaphor for it, that a teacher of mine at the residency gave, was like, look, you know, if you think about building a house the same way people talk about learning about craft and storytelling, then they would think that a house that is built only of 2x4s and plywood is done. But, like, that's, we're just talking about structure and foundation. Like, there are reasons why houses are mostly shaped the same. It's not because houses are all the same and boring once you build them that way. It's because this house stuff has to work or else it won't stand up. And to understand that those structural pieces are a means to a more stable, consistent, and you know, approachable creative end result, I was just like, whoa, that's super empowering, and it's also really sensible. And extending that to the whole idea of like, okay, so now I know the structure, and now I approach it like it's work. Like, all the writers who are super successful just write like it's work. They write like it's their day job. You know, like, it might be pulling teeth to get those two hours or 2,000 words, but I still got to do it every day, because that's what my job is. And so, when you think about this notion of productivity, not as, you know, this is some, you know, way of stripping life's beautiful randomness from you. It's actually just sort of a way to put up the foundation of a house so that you then have the creative space to decorate it and to finish it the way that makes it truly uniquely you. That's all it really is. That's what chasing productivity is. That's what, you know, being busy is about. It's about the necessary structures to allow creative expression to flourish within boundaries that make sense, as opposed to utter chaos, which is what my life kind of is right now. So I'm trying to get back on the horse. It's interesting, though, because to sort of connect it all back to what Craig was talking about, my mom always told me, if you want a job done, give it to a busy person. And I believe that there's a limit to that. You know, I think that my experience at Apple, which I guess I can talk about now, it's where I was working. I don't think I ever really mentioned it. Did I mention it? I tried to keep it pretty much under wraps, but I was working at Apple.
I don't remember.
I was working at Apple, and it was amazing, prestigious company, but it was like being underneath a very large boot. And I don't think that I was in a position with that level of busyness and pressure that I would have been able to do much of anything. But there is sort of a sweet spot of busyness where if you don't have a lot to do, it's really easy to blow off work. If you do have a lot to do, it's easy to say, this is the amount of time that I have to do X work in. And so that's why scheduling out your life is a good way to get back on the horse. It's about taking stock. It's about doing an audit of the things that you care about. It's not about reducing your creative personal connection to the world. It's about providing yourself a framework in which to have it in a healthy way. Because it, like, when you don't have that structure, things like eating consistently start being challenging. You're like, oh my God, why is it so hard to like regularly eat lunch? And you realize it's because you don't have a time that you set aside to like think, now is when I need to eat lunch. If it is always in flux, then you never have anything to really hold on to. But yeah, so the rest of the episodes for, I suppose, the month of August, even though this is stuff we have listed in July in our planner, are going to be about getting back into a productive headspace and into a productive workspace. And we're going to conclude that series of episodes talking about John actually produced a book called Your Daily Journal, 100 Day Starter. And we're going to end on that episode about how tracking yourself daily is a really good way, not of giving yourself a hard time, but of keeping yourself honest. So I'm looking forward to learning from both of you about how to get my shit together. And as always, I appreciate very much your flexibility and patience with me on this journey. We are just over 20 minutes. Do either of you have any final thoughts about getting back on the horse? Or should we call it and let our listeners go about the rest of their day?
I think I would just share a closing suggestion for all our listeners, kind of like how we often have a recommended link. So one thing that I find very helpful, I like to break my day into sort of 20-minute pockets. And I actually, every morning when I do my journal, I have a small sticky note. And I make a list of what specifically I want to do. So, for example, read book, read this, work on whatever writing project. So it could be things like that. But I find it helpful to actually say, set a goal, make a little list of some things you want to get done where you're going to focus for those 20 minutes. And then as you go through the day, try to cross them off. And it just helps, like you're mentioning, structure. It's just a little way to get start to... You can feel accomplished and like you start to see how you're spending your time. So something worth trying if you want to get back on track or create structure in your life.
I think that's a fabulous idea. Craig, do you have anything to add?
Nope.
Cool. Well, thank you, podcasters, for joining me. Thank you, listeners, for coming back to us. And we will catch you next time. Ooh.